Welcome back to What's Cooking. This is Patty Bess, and I'm your host for the next hour. We're going to talk about my favorite subject, food. You've been listening to George Winston's December. You know, I've had that CD for probably 8 years. I have to tell you one funny story. I was walking around Sacramento yesterday, a couple of days ago, doing errands and a little shopping. I had to leave a few stores. The Christmas music was so horrible. So I went up to have tacos at one place, and I went up and asked them, could you please turn the music off? or I had to take out food. It was so awful. But George Winston just does this stunning job with music. My guest today is, we're going to start with my first guest, Wendy Van Wagner. She's the owner of Nevada City's newest and first cooking school. Wendy, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Patty. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited that you're going to bring a cooking school to Nevada County.
Me too. I've really been anticipating opening here, and I'm so happy to be here. The response from the community has been overwhelming, and I think people are really at a point where they're interested in learning more about good food and how to prepare it.
So how did this cooking school come about? Is this something that you've been thinking and planning for a lot of years?
Well, I wouldn't say a lot of years. This is my first career, so I've been doing this for 3 years more informally. I was teaching classes out of my house when I lived in San Francisco. And when I moved back to Nevada City about a year and a half ago, I had an opportunity to open a commercial location, and so I've been working on getting that open for about 10 months. And this past month has been dedicated to what I've called a soft launch, offering a small selection of classes, gearing up for the holidays, really focusing on holiday baking, warming winter soups and stews, and then after the new year, I'll go into a full schedule of classes.
Sounds great. So what kinds of classes are coming up, say, in January?
Well, in January, on January 6th is my first class of the new year, and it's called Fabulous French Cooking. And it's a class that I've taught many times, and I really love it. It's in a sense, demystifying some of these more complex dishes that you might have in a fancy restaurant and think, oh, there's no way I could ever recreate that on my own, which I thought the first time I'd ever learned how to make those, oh, sure, I'll be able to make a cheese souffle today, but we'll see how it goes when I'm on my own. And really, they're just simple techniques that you learn, like anything, like any skill, and they're really able to carry over into other aspects of cooking as well. So in this class, we start with French onion soup, a more pared-down home-style version of that. And in that class, not only do we learn to make the soup, but we learn the process of caramelizing onions, making a beef stock from scratch. So those are individual skills that you can take and apply to other recipes as well. And then we also make a cheese souffle and chicken cordon bleu and a bechamel sauce, which is a basic white sauce. Also very versatile in terms of your cooking repertoire.
You know, I think one of the things about demystifying French foods is people think it's really heavy, but they eat such small portions of things. In some ways they eat very richly, in other ways they eat very disciplined, you know, a mm-hmm. small amount of this dish and a small amount of the next course and a small amount of the next course.
It's really true, and I find that when I'm eating not necessarily rich food at every meal, but when I have a certain amount of heavier foods in my diet, I'm so satisfied with what it is that I'm eating that I don't feel like I need to snack throughout the day, or I just feel a lot more grounded when I'm eating those sort of foods. Mm-hmm. And then also in this class, we end the meal with a really, really simple fresh salad, and we make a from scratch citrus and olive oil salad dressing, and it's just the perfect ending note to a really heavy meal. You end with the flavor of fresh greens, and that way you do bring vegetables into the diet, some really, really fresh vegetables. But when you're eating something heavy like that, I think it's important to add some kind of fresh element to it.
Mm-hmm. And so what other kinds of classes are you having next month?
So I'm also trying to expand my classes to offer morning classes for people who maybe work at night when most of my classes are, or who have free time during the day. Mm-hmm. And twice, two Wednesdays in January, I'll be offering a class called Make It and Take It. And that's a class very similar to the other classes where we're learning all new recipes. But instead of sharing the meal at the end of class, the students get to take a full meal home as dinner for their family or friends or whatever. So you kind of kill two birds with one stone with that one.
Yeah, you have a fun morning, and then you go home and dinner's ready.
Yeah, well, my school is located on Zion Street, right across from Gold Run School. And I always see lots of moms kind of hanging out, dropping their kids off from school, and I'm sure they're zipping off to do other things. But my idea was this would be a great opportunity for them to get together with some friends and do something fun in the morning when they're right there, and then have dinner made at the end of class.
That's great. How big is your facility?
My facility is in an old bungalow house, and it's been totally remodeled into a commercial kitchen. So the kitchen is really the largest part of the house, and then I have a dining room and a smaller prep kitchen in the back. And I can have about 12 students per class. Mm-hmm. They're all hands-on classes, really focusing on whole foods, seasonal foods, cooking from scratch. And like I said, all the students participate, so when you walk away from class, you feel like, oh, well, I did this here. I can easily recreate this at home. And, of course, you leave with the recipes as well.
Well, that sounds like fun. You know, I was noticing on your website that aren't you associated with the Bluebird Farm?
I am. My brother and his farm partner, Leonard Chapman, run Bluebird Farm. And so seasonality and local food is also a big emphasis of in the kitchen. And we've been kind of running an informal experiment this year on how local can we really take it, what can we eat during the winter that people might not think of when they think of local food. It's pretty easy to eat locally during the summer when we have this amazing bounty of zucchini, tomatoes, herbs, eggplant, squash, summer squash. It just goes on and on. But during the winter, there's also foods that are available. A lot of root vegetables. I call them the underdog of vegetables because a lot of people have a negative association with vegetables like parsnips, turnips. Some people have never even heard of kohlrabi, which is also a winter vegetable. And then, of course, there's winter squash as well. But these vegetables have a longer life because they grow underground. And so if you don't pull them, or if you do pull them and store them in a dark, cold place, say a basement, or you can even create something that has that same environment in your garage, you can have those throughout the winter.
And does Bluebird grow those things, or are those available?
Yeah, Bluebird, and I'm sure a lot of the other local farms have a small winter crop growing the parsnips and the turnips and the squash. Mm-hmm. And I know there isn't a farmer's market throughout the winter, so getting access to those foods if you're really dedicated to being local can be a bit difficult. But I know Bluebird in particular has been doing an occasional once-a-week farm stand where they're offering their winter mm-hmm. winter foods.
I don't think I've ever eaten a kohlrabi.
Yeah, kohlrabi is one of those. I've really started to get into it just this year myself. Kohlrabi is in the brassica family. It's similar to broccoli and cabbage and that sort of thing. And it actually is a really special vegetable because you can get two meals or two vegetables out of one. It's not technically a root vegetable because it grows above the soil, but it looks like a root. It's really bulbous. And then it has shoots of greens coming off the top. And to me, it has a really similar taste and flavor to broccoli. So when you can steam the greens or saute the greens that are at the top. They're really, really rich in fiber and they're just beautiful. So you can steam those and then you can take the bulb of the kohlrabi. And what I've been doing it is just, what I've been doing with it is blanching it in water and then sauteing it to give it a nice crispy, flavorful outside. So again, to me, it tastes like broccoli, but it just has a much different texture.
Hmm. I might have to try it sometime. I think I have a phobia, of a kohlrabi phobia.
Well, give it a try.
And I've also been reading that you love parsnips.
I do love parsnips. Parsnips and turnips are two of my new favorites. Turnips are one of those things that I think most people in my generation haven't even really eaten, but we just have this association with, yuck, turnips. But we don't even know what they are.
Exactly.
And turnips are an interesting vegetable. They are roots, for one, and you can also use the greens with a turnip. But there's a special variety of turnip that I've really been into recently, and it's called the Japanese turnip. And it's a big white turnip. And it actually has more of a texture like a radish than a root vegetable to me. It's really watery. And they're delicious if you just chop them up, toss them with some olive oil and salt and pepper, and roast them in the oven. Roasting is a great way to go with most winter vegetables. You can add herbs, you can add spices, but olive oil and salt and pepper, you can't go wrong. 400 degrees in the oven for about 25 to 30 minutes, depending on what the vegetable is. But so for the white Japanese turnip, that's an option. But what I've also really liked doing is grating them on a cheese grater, just like you'd grate cheese. And so you have this really watery vegetable.
Sort of like a radish. Do you add it to salad?
You can add it to salad, or you can even make its own little winter turnip slaw with that. You can add toasted cumin seeds, raisins, lemon juice, and then that's just a really simple, fresh, super fresh, raw element to any of the other heavier dishes you're eating during the winter.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a little side salsa. You could have a turnip
exactly.
salsa.
Exactly. I mean, we made tostadas the other night, and I put this turnip salsa, if you will, on top of it, and it was perfect. It makes it different enough during the winter so that you're aware of the seasonality, but you're not giving up that fresh food in the middle of winter. Mm-hmm. And then parsnips are really similar to carrots. They look like white carrots, and they have a nubbier texture on the outside. They're really, really rich in potassium and fiber, so that's just one of the many reasons to eat them. But they have a stronger flavor, and also they're very high in starch. So if you were looking for something to substitute a potato with, for example, with a meal that you would usually have a baked potato, try a baked or roasted parsnip, and I guarantee kids love them because they have kind of a sweet texture to them.
They're very sweet, actually.
They're very sweet. Mm-hmm. And then also winter squash is a great way to go. I mean, that's kind of my go-to meal when I don't know what else to cook, but when I'm feeling a little bit uninspired, I know I can make something delicious and colorful and really rich with a squash. But to a lot of people, it's confusing as to what to do with this really hard squash. How do you get in there? Where do you even begin? But what I've always found is great, you throw it in the oven. Again, the roasting technique, 400 degrees with the squash, you want to go 35 to 40 minutes. And then when you open it, you just scrape out the seeds. You can put butter, brown sugar, or go for a more savory flavor with some butter. Sage is really great. Mm-hmm. And then to make a full meal, you can go ahead and make some sort of stuffing and then just put it inside the squash. And people are amazed, and they feel utterly special when you present them with something as beautiful as that.
I've had winter squash before, like pureed with just a little bit of whipped cream.
And
it was just delicious, with maybe just an orange flavoring. It was just a side dish, you know, it was just a little plunk on your plate with something, other things.
And exactly.
It was just really, the texture is lovely.
It really is. Yeah. And there's some really great squashes that are being grown locally. Everyone knows the butternut squash, and most people know about acorn squashes. But there's also the carnival squash, which looks like a little pumpkin, but it's white and it's speckled. And then there's also my favorite, which is delicata squash. Mm-hmm. And those just have the smoothest texture. They're orange on the inside like a butternut, but they're long like a zucchini. But it's a hard squash. And you can cut those in rounds and roast those. And those are really great hors d'oeuvres to make a simple stuffing with, just like you would do for Thanksgiving. And you put a little spoonful of that stuffing on top of the rounds of squash, and it's a perfect winter appetizer.
Now, when you roast them, do you have to like brush them with a little olive oil so they don't get too dried out, or that doesn't?
You know, you can do all sorts of things. That's definitely a way to go. But what I do, so that I have just a basic palette to work with after I'm done roasting it, is I slice them and then I place them in a baking dish with about an inch of water and cover it with tin foil. Mm-hmm. So that way they steam and roast at the same time. So they cook quicker that way. So if you don't have 40 minutes, you can do that in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you can take it out and you can baste them with olive oil or butter, mm-hmm. or whatever it is that you're deciding to do with them.
And you kind of eat the skin on those.
The skin is really delicious on those. It gets,
you don't have to peel it.
You don't have to peel it. You know, that's a time saver there for a lot of people who are on a tight schedule for dinner, but really want to make the effort to eat together and eat a nice meal. So you can just leave the skin on, and you don't have to eat it, but you can eat it. So
I've seen a lot of recipes, and they'll say peel the winter squash, and that I just turn the page right there and go, I don't think so, not tonight.
Although one tip I will add is with a butternut squash, you can peel that with a carrot, with a vegetable peeler, and that's a really great thing, because if you just want to save time and not roast that, and you want to saute it or steam it, you can peel it and then just chop it up, and it makes it a lot easier to cut as well.
Oh, that's good, because a lot of times they'll say put it into a recipe.
Right.
In chunks, and I think, how long does it take to peel that?
Exactly.
So the root veg, they're the grounded wonders.
They're the grounded wonders, or we were talking the other day, and you said the bad girls or the dirty girls of the vegetable world.
Yeah,
but we were
nobody likes them.
Well, I do also want to mention a couple other classes.
Uh-huh.
One is, since we're talking about these warm winter foods, Kalita Todd, who has taught other classes locally, she will be teaching a class in February 16th, called Warm Winter Casseroles.
Oh,
and I'm really excited
good.
To see what her menu is going to be. I know it's going to be a great class. This fall, I took a canning class with her, and she's so capable and knowledgeable in the kitchen. I think she's going to be really fabulous to have in the kitchen. And you're also teaching a class on January 19th, Meatless Mondays. And I'm really excited about that class. I know a lot of people who are interested in taking some meat out of their diet but not committing to vegetarianism will really appreciate that class. It'll be perfect for that.
And I think there's a lot of, just like you said about French food, you can just really demystify. People think cooking vegetarian is complex, and it really isn't. It's very simple. It just requires a few changes in thinking.
Exactly.
Let's see. Well, I know you moved recently from the Bay Area, and tell us a little bit about what you did in the Bay Area. You worked on a school lunch program?
I did. I worked on a school lunch program. I was studying nutrition at Bowman College in Berkeley, and simultaneously I got hired by the North Oakland Community Charter School, and I started an organic school lunch program there. And it was a really sweet school. It was a perfect size to start this sort of program. It was K through 6th. And there were 80 kids there. So it was a very close relationship with me and all the kids. And everything was cooked on site. It was.
The kids cooked it?
The kids didn't cook it, but I did start offering kids cooking classes.
Uh-huh.
I cooked it, but the kids were really involved with the menu planning. And also we had an educational portion of the program so that we could introduce new foods to the kids. So when they would see things like parsnips, for example, they were really excited to try them, and they weren't thinking, ew, what is this? I've never seen this. Why is this carrot white? I don't want to eat this. So through that program, what I really found was that education and just repeated exposure to these new foods was key in getting kids to try foods out of their comfort zone. And again, same with a lot of adults. You think you don't like something, but maybe that's because you haven't tried it since you were five or something.
Exactly.
And you didn't like it when you were five. Your taste buds were really hyper aware, and so it just didn't agree with you. But give it a try again. The worst that can happen is that you still don't like it.
Well, and you know, it's also, you just, gee, I forgot what I was going to say. My mind went blank.
Well, I'll mention one more thing because we're talking about kids. I didn't mention that I also offer kids cooking classes, and those will be every Friday starting January 9th, and I have the schedule through February. And I'm offering two classes on Fridays, one that's geared towards the charter schools that I know get out earlier. That's 1 to 3, and then 3:30 to 5:30. And right now, my front yard and edible garden is covered in snow, but eventually when that melts off, part of these classes will be incorporating growing food on just a super small level and the cooking portion of it. So kids really seem to like that.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. We have these assumptions that kids hate vegetables,
mm-hmm.
but I think it comes from having been exposed to vegetables that weren't really cooked well, that weren't fresh, and you know, they are very flexible when you just present them with something very colorful and tasty.
Exactly. Everyone loves a colorful plate, so
yeah,
can't go wrong with that.
I can remember my son, when he was about 6, we had an older neighbor next door, and she would pass. I mean, I could never get him to eat, you know, green peppers or anything, but when my neighbor passed a green pepper over the garden fence, and it was something special from his grandma Adele, he thought it was the sweetest thing he'd ever tasted. But it was fresh out of the garden, and,
yeah.
And I tasted it, and I thought, yeah, that is actually a lot sweeter. No wonder they like it better.
Yeah. Well, this early this fall, I had radishes growing in my in my little front yard. And my cousin from the Bay Area came to visit, and I was showing her around, and we were playing around out there. And she picked a couple radishes and handed them to me, like almost as a dare. I dare you to eat these. They were just out of the dirt. And I, of course, was like, oh, thank you so much. Let's go wash these, and I'll eat one. And she looked at me like I was crazy, but then I was like, you should really try one. They're so good. And she was really hesitant, but then she tried one, and she was like, whoa, this is good. So, you know, just a little encouragement, and maybe not forcing kids to do it, but making them think it's their own choice.
Yeah, right. That's always the tricky part.
Well, and I don't have kids, so I guess I haven't been there.
Yeah, and especially when they go to school and get exposed to kids that don't eat like that.
Yeah.
It becomes very difficult. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about some cheeses. Or do you have anything else you want to tell us?
I think that's all. I just really look forward to having more of the community involved in cooking and classes, and I love what I'm doing. So thanks to everyone who's been so supportive.
Yeah, Lynn, it shows. You're very enthusiastic. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
She's starting her own business. She's quite an ambitious young lady. Okay, this piece of music has really lovely harmonics and just very beautiful harmonies. And it's my Christmas present to myself. And so I'm going to share it with you, if I can find which one it's on. Very short.
Got it to be grateful for all I ever had. I've decided to let go of all this pain tonight. I've decided to let go of all these demons inside. I know I am blessed. I know all I ever wanted was this. I know I don't. It's okay to be alive. I've decided to be kinder to myself when I feel sad. I've decided to be grateful for all I ever had.
Welcome back to What's Cooking. This is Patty Bess. And I forgot to mention before we moved on, how do you reach the cooking school? It's called In the Kitchen.
It's called In the Kitchen. I'm listed in the phone book, but I'll give my phone number right now for anyone who is interested in more information. It's 478-0669. And again, I'm located at 648 Zion Street in Nevada City. It's just down from SPD on the way to downtown Nevada City. And you can also find a full listing of my classes at my website, which is my full name, wendyvanwagner.com. And another way to get involved is to read my food blog, which I love posting very frequently at. And it's called localfoodtastesbetter.wordpress.com. So.
Great. All right. So my other guest today is Mary Diedrich, who's had a cheese store in Placerville for 4 or 5 or 6 years. And her cheese store over in the Pretty Little Blue Building on Commercial Street has been there two years already, Mary?
One year. We just did our first year anniversary.
Oh, that's right, because you opened kind of right before Christmas last year. Yeah. Well, welcome, Mary. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for inviting me.
And so I thought maybe we might talk about, since we're getting close to Christmas, if you wanted to create, experiment, because this is the time of the year we all splurge and buy really cool cheeses and things. What if you wanted to experiment? What kind of new cheeses have you got out there that you might use, like, on a cheese plate or if you're taking hors d'oeuvres somewhere?
Well, cheese plates are a great way to bring a hostess gift to someone's house, also if you're having it for yourself. We carry about 300 different cheeses. So
300 cheeses?
Yeah. And that's a small amount. I've been to stores with a lot more than that. So I'm always pleased that we have such a large selection, especially around the holidays. I would first, talk to us and see how many people are you having and what, is this the main course? Is this something that is...
One of many hors d'oeuvres.
One of many hors d'oeuvres and go from there. I'm an odd numbered person, and I like 3 or 5 cheeses on a platter.
I would like you in my writing classes.
Probably. and having something hard, creamy, sort of semi-soft, sort of to fill everybody's sort of taste buds, and going from the spectrum of mild to sharp, and that is a great opportunity to try something that you've never had, and also to make your guests happy, because let's face it, sometimes we look at a block of cheese and go, I've never had it, I don't want to spend $10 on that. So they, buy it at Christmas time and have it on a cheese board, and...
They're hooked.
Well, that's just it. It's a great way for everybody to try. You talk about it, and we give you little information. Almost every one of our cheeses has a label on it that has the name of the cheese and where it comes from, and maybe some blurb about it has vegetarian rennet, or it won awards and stuff like that. So it gives you something to talk about when you're talking to your guest and family.
Mm-hmm.
Other things I like to add to cheese platters are things like fresh fruit, which is great, and dried fruit. We don't think about that, but it's really good on a cheese platter, and if you it doesn't all get eaten, you can use it. You can eat it later. Another thing is to think about crackers. How are you going to serve the cheese? Is it, crackers are a great way. Fresh bread is another vehicle to get the cheese into our little mouths. And then another thing to think about are olives and nuts and pepperdews and tapenades and things that go on the cheese platter that you can make this beautiful cheese platter, so they kind of just stop in front of the cheese platter and help themselves and use the little tools you give them and toothpicks, and don't forget a little side dish for the used toothpicks, and that way they have a smorgasbord in front of them, usually all in one plate, but if not, have three or, couple separate plates to make it easy for people to help themselves.
Would you mostly serve a cheese platter with, like, a red wines or white wines or champagne, maybe?
You can do all of the above. I mean, if you came into our store, you could easily say, we're having this, and we can really help pair the wine. Maybe you know what you bought already. We can pair it to that, or we can make suggestions to... We're just having whites, and we want to have it before dinner with champagne, and we can gear you towards that. Sometimes on the plate, have 3 different ones, and then talk about what did you like it with that wine. Because wine, cheese, not everybody likes everything, so it's good to have an assortment.
Because you can also serve a cheese plate as a sort of dessert. I know in French food, they often serve the cheese plate as one of the last courses.
Yes, especially if you're having I love port. So after dinner is usually some level of port. And traditionally, I guess everybody does with, some sort of chocolate. And that's great, too. But I like it with blue cheese because I think the savoriness and the saltiness in the cheese.
And the port.
Oh.
And what kind
melts well into your mouth.
Yeah, really. I'm getting hungry for Christmas already.
Yes.
And so you would serve that with crackers or maybe on a little... Blue cheese on bread?
Blue cheese on bread would be fine. Crackers, your finger if you're really hungry and can't wait.
And nobody's looking.
And nobody's looking. That's right. You've washed your hands first, please.
And the crackers are just a vehicle for the cheese anyways.
This is true. Very true. I would recommend not pre-slicing your cheese too much because it dries out.
Oh, uh-huh.
And always, cheese really tastes better at room temperature, so make sure that it's not straight out of the fridge onto the platter. Give it about an hour. It wants to be at room temperature.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a variety of blue cheeses that have just tremendously different tastes. Like some blue cheeses, they're okay to crumble on a salad, but they're not an eating cheese. And then I've had blue cheeses where I think, oh, I could live on this.
I can think of several I could live on. There are cheeses that are great crumbled and multi-purpose as an eating cheese. But another thing, if you have a blue cheese on your cheese platter, and let's say everybody didn't eat it and you have some leftover, make blue cheese dressing the next day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a great way to use your leftovers.
Mm-hmm. And how would you make a blue cheese dressing? A little crumbled blue cheese.
Yes. Little milk. Or
okay,
olive
Wendy,
oil.
What do you say here?
She's sure her mind's going. She's like, what am I going
to
do here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you really wanted to be bad, you could even add just cream to it or a little buttermilk to really bring out that
mm-hmm.
sour
taste. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a harsher, but a denser lettuce, like we used to use iceberg lettuces with those heavier salad dressings, but at least a romaine or something like a.
Yeah. Well, even I've seen more and more recently, like, kind of retro menus that are offering the wedge of iceberg lettuce with really good blue cheese dressing.
Yeah.
So again, I tend to think that when people are doing that, it's just a vehicle for the really, really good dressing, because iceberg lettuce, it's like whatever.
But it does have its functions.
It does.
Because it's the crunchiest thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, one of the other things I've been noticing, a couple of years ago, I talked my way into being a KVMR broadcaster, into the cheese extravaganza that they put on in San Francisco. Have you ever gone to that?
Yes.
Oh, Wendy, you have to talk your way into it someday. There were cheeses piled so high I should have brought my skis so I could slide down the hill. That was the most delectable, interesting thing. Like, we don't think of cheeses. We think of them as, you grab some cheddar and some mozzarella for your kids at home. But cheese is one of the booming industries, like olive oil,
mm-hmm.
In our country. And are there any California producers that you really like? Because, of course, we like the California producers better.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because they come from happy California cows.
and those
and
commercials
goats
are
and
so
sheep.
Good.
Yes, they are. Yes, actually, in my store in Placerville, our local cheese person is called Le Clarin Farms, and she is a goat producer, and it's raw goat's milk.
Mm-hmm.
And we carry three of her cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
And she recently, her first one was called Sierra Mountain Tome, and the second one is Roussette, and this third one is El Dorado Gold, mm-hmm. which is so mm-hmm. fitting because the outer is a washed rind, and it has a little hint of kind of rust yellow with some black speckles, and they're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so happy that they're raw goat's milk. So mm-hmm. that's our local producer. And then we have Cypress Grove, which is in California. We have Redwood Hill Farms.
And then out in Point Reyes.
Point Reyes. Original Blue is the cheese from them that we carry. And
is that the cheese that a couple of years ago won several awards, and it's like a combination of a brie and a blue cheese? Have you ever tasted that?
Mm-mm, that sounds amazing.
It was amazing.
I think that was Rogue River. Not Rogue Red. It's in Oregon.
I could have. Yeah, that
Rouge.
Yeah.
Names not in my brain at the second. But actually, Original Blue last year and the year before did win a gold medal at the state fair. California mm-hmm. State Fair.
Uh-huh.
So,
have you ever been to that cheese competition in San Francisco?
Yes, I've been the judge the last 2 years.
Oh, is it always in San Francisco?
No.
It goes
moves
around
the
country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, it was fascinating to me because, because you say you're, with the media, which I don't really do that much with the media, but.
For cheese, if anybody would do it.
I would stretch the truth a little. But I met this wonderful, tall, skinny Wisconsin farmer, and he took me by the arm, and he was so proud. I mean, it was what was saving his dairy, because
mm-hmm.
he was, when they started I guess this was about 3 years ago, there was that new growth hormone, and there was too much milk on the market, and he was losing his farm.
Mm-hmm.
But he was starting to do these cheeses, and he had wonderful cheeses, and he took me by his arm, told me all about his cows and how he does his cheese, and he was so cute.
I have a question for you, Mary. I don't know if this is something you do, but it just came to me. Do you know how to make any simple cheeses? And is that something I think people would be really interested in learning how to make some simple, soft cheeses.
I personally have never made cheese.
Wow. Surprising.
It is surprising.
I'm too busy selling.
Which is good. But our local person, Carolyn, is the farmer, and mm-hmm. she has invited me and my staff to all come over. So in January, we're going to close the stores, and we're going to go over and learn how to make cheese.
We're
very excited in Placerville. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
now,
exciting.
There is a goat cheese that's made locally through Bluebird Farm, I think.
Yeah.
But she doesn't make it regularly.
She doesn't make it regularly, but I do know her name is Sunshine Beck, and she might be willing to teach anyone interested in making it. It's very, very beautiful, soft, subtle goat cheese.
Mm-hmm. Most of the year, I have to be very, very careful not to eat dairy products. So I did a lot of experimenting with finding sheep's milk cheeses and goat milk cheeses, and they really didn't bother my digestive system at all. And I also found that, you know, I thought, oh, I'm so sensitive to dairy, I can't do cheese anymore, and that was heartbreaking. What I couldn't do was mass-produced cheeses that somehow, I don't know what they do with them, but that fouls me up. But if I got really good quality cheeses, that I could really digest them well.
Mm-hmm. We get a lot of people who come in and very nicely point out that they're lactose intolerant, and we direct them to that, and it's opened up a whole new world, because, like you, I have to give up cheese. Mm-hmm. And they're very unhappy about it, and this puts them in a new direction. And sometimes you'll find, and I don't know if you found this, a nice hard cheese like Parmesan, because it's aged, you can still eat that.
Yeah, that's the ones that really are better, the more aged cheeses. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we do have Parmesan a lot. I get to have that all I want.
A plus.
So let's talk. Are there any other producers that have come along in the booming industry that have kind of made some impressive things?
There are some out of California. There are some. Colorado has Haystack Farms. They are just phenomenal. There are several in Wisconsin. We've got some. We've gotten samples of it, so we're going to bring that in next year. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's sustainably grown. So, like Carolyn at La Clarine Farms. We stop having her stuff from about February to June, and then we start having her stuff again. So it's not that she can't do it, it's just not eating the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sometimes get samples from all around the world, and they send us little packages, and we try their cheese and bring them in. So,
mm-hmm. You know, I think it's very exciting. This is a very California statement, but, you know, in the world of olive oil, California olive oils are starting to compete on a worldwide level, and especially our Sierra Nevada olive oils, they're winning awards, and you're thinking, oh, yes, we're doing better than the Spanish and the Greek. You know, it's coming back. That's exciting. And it's really exciting to see, like, American cheeses are coming back, because we're always known for our American cheese.
Which, what is that exactly?
It's that orange stuff that...
I'm not going to tell you.
Velveeta that we grew up on.
Scary word.
A note about olive oil. I just heard this on the radio. So much of what's imported is actually not pure olive oil. It's adulterated with different oils that can actually be harmful to your health. And just recently, the standards of international olive oil have been raised. But that's just another reason why we should
buy local.
Continue with purchasing and using California olive oil. It's really the best.
Well, I know our local person in Loma Rica just won their...
Galileo.
Yeah,
our laws, around the world, they have very strict laws about their olive oil, what can be called extra virgin.
Mm-hmm.
But here in the United States, during the 20s and the 30s, when there were a lot of, the Italians that were in charge of things, who had a lot of power in our country, they kept those laws at bay. So we don't have standards. In the United States, you can kind of call anything you want extra virgin olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
So the California Olive Oil Council is working on that, and there is a law in some of, I don't know if it's a federal law or a state law, where they're trying to change that. So I think we will see more olive oils, more of a level playing field for California growers. Anything else about cheese you'd like to tell us?
Oh, I could give you some ideas of what to do after your cheese platter.
Oh, sure.
Take all that fruit and make a smoothie.
Yes.
Your cheeses, one of the things, there's two recipes. One is in Jacques Pepin's cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
Take all your cheeses that are left over that you don't want to do anything with, and you make a mixture of them, grate them all up or chop them all up, and then melt them and spread them on the bread you had left over, make toast points.
Mm.
Or make croutons out of it, or make something that you can slice and spread it on. The cheese will never taste the same because you're putting different ones in there, but don't be afraid. It's actually turns into this great recipe. We donate all of our leftover cheese ends and things to a couple restaurants in Placerville, and they make this and serve this. It's wonderful. So a recipe to come up with for your cheese.
I've also heard that you can take the rinds and put those in some sort of sauce that you're making.
Yes.
I've never done that myself, but I've
done that in my polenta.
Yeah.
And they say add the Parmesan rind.
Yes. Mm. We recommend that when you buy a piece of Parmesan, you get a rind on there.
Uh-huh.
And when you get down to the bottom, you should always take your Parmesan and use the rind as the handle when you're grating it. And then keep it on there. Don't cut that off and throw it away. Put it in a Ziploc bag.
Mm-hmm.
The longer the rind stays under, the less dry your cheese will become.
Oh.
And don't put it in a Ziploc bag. You want to saran wrap it every time you eat off of it. But take that rind, put it in the freezer in a Ziploc bag. And then when you're making stew or soup or beans or something, throw it in there. It'll add that flavor and then pull it out before you serve so nobody gets that big.
And use it again.
I wouldn't use it again.
Okay.
Just once.
Just once. Okay.
Just once. But once is good enough.
Yeah, it made a tremendous difference when I did it. I had only read that once, you know, about adding it to your polenta. And I thought, sometimes polenta is a little flat tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great way to use up my old Parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lady come in the other day and ask me if I sold rinds. And I didn't have any to give her, but we talked about what she should do. And so that was a useful thing.
Let's see. Well, so Mary, you want to tell us when the store is open? And I guess I did tell them where it is.
Well, Diedrich's Cheese is on 405 Commercial Street. We are open 7 days a week. And our hours are 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday, and 11 to 5 on Sundays.
Sounds good.
Yes.
And I better thank my donors and call it a day. Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for having us on, though.
Yes, very much so.
Thanks for the lively discussion. Now I'm going home to get some...
Are you hungry?
Yeah, I'm hungry.
We hope everybody else is hungry, too.
That's the best part of Christmas.
Yes, I think so.
So I'd like to thank my faithful underwriters who each in part make this program happen, and that is Sacramento Natural Foods Co-op, presenting the class Winter Bicycle Commuting, in which participants learn essential traffic skills and how to equip a bike for cold, wet weather. Monday, January 12th at 6:30 p.m. Complete class schedule is at sacfoodcoop.com. And also thank you to Grass Valley Hydro Gardens, serving hydroponic and organic gardening needs of Nevada County since 2000. Grass Valley Hydro Garden offers sun system and hydro farm lighting, organic soil, fertilizers, ventilation, and hydroponic systems. Grass Valley Hydro Garden is at 12506 Loma Rica Drive. You can reach them at 530-477-2996. And in the upcoming months, I'm also hoping to have Kathy Sheffield, a local dietitian, come to be a guest in January or February. We're not sure yet. And she's kind of an expert on eating disorders. And I'm reading this really great book by the author of The Artist's Way, where it's talking about eating disorders and not taking the time to be involved in your own creative activities. So it's a really fascinating book, so I look forward to talking with Kathy about those. I guess just really loving to eat is not an eating disorder, though. So I want to thank you for joining us. I'll be back next month, and Alice McAllister is up next. I hope your holiday season is full of memories to keep in your heart and, of course, great food to share with family and friends. My last piece of music is from Richard Geisler's Village and Early Music Society. They actually performed last weekend at the Victorian Christmas. And this is some kind of interesting old Christmas music. And we'll see you next month.